A red letter N unfolds into a spectrum of colors.
Glowing staffs are spun as a camera tracks in a circle around a young performer in a dark studio. Muscled actors perform a fight. A man in a smart suit and glasses.
My name is Nicholas Winding Refn, and I'm the creator of Copenhagen Cowboy.
Nicholas directs gunfire.
This is not a making of, but more of an insight on how the cowboy fell asleep and woke up in Copenhagen.
A figure in a window. The image flashes and the title in pink cursive, Copenhagen Cowboy. Actors rehearse a fight. A young actor kicks their adult opponent, who doubles over. Lola Corfixen, Raquel.
I would describe Copenhagen Cowboy as fantasy, horror, and adventurous.
The name is already tells something. It's you cannot put words on it when you hear Copenhagen Cowboy. What is it? You know, Copenhagen, modern city, and cowboy from old Western style. How do you combine those two things together? It's already amazing there.
I think it's very colorful, very potent, and very raw at the same time. And we definitely kind of have horror elements and fairy tale elements.
Lily Zhang, Mother Hulda, then Magnus Nordenhoff-Jönsch, director of photography.
The original pitch was, I'm going to do an extension of the Pusher trilogy. And everyone said, great, let's go do it. But there was going to be a spaceship. I would say the story of Copenhagen Cowboy on paper was about a young woman who transforms through a series to become a superhero.
The actress in a kaleidoscope, Johanna Ahlgren and Sara Isabella Jonsson, writers.
It's like this, well, fairy tale like underworld of Copenhagen or Denmark. It's certainly not the Denmark we know.
No.
It's a world that transcends realism.
This is Muse world. So you are brought along and down deep into the underworld of Denmark through Muse journey.
We had a little chair for you. Don't you have a similar one? The cast and crew on a low-lit set.
I thought it could be fun if I had come back to Denmark, I would create like a fairy tale narrative. So I hired a great group of female writers.
I think the reason why we looked at fairy tales and Greek mythology and Shakespearean dramas might be because they all have this concept of fate, because we wanted with Miu to also have this feeling of there is an element of fate, that she was born to do something, if she was even born.
Welcome. Where do you come from? That's a long story.
I started with first the title. I said Cowboy and then Copenhagen, and those became CC. It was like two contrasted components together, but they flowed very well on the tongue. And it became enigmatic of what it actually was, which was exciting to me. What would I make that my kids would find interesting? And that became Mew. I wanted to resurrect the kind of alter ego that I had created with, you know, Mads Mikkelsen and Ryan Gosling and Vitaire on my previous films, to create a show, a character that was an extension of myself, but as a young woman would reflect more of a role model for my children. And I knew that the protagonist of the show had to start off as a young woman.
And there's definitely a need for these female heroes. Mm. And we had like an ongoing discussion about that. And it's like when you create this kind of character who's mysterious and very driven and might use violence to attain his or her goals. If it's a man, I guess we easily accept that and don't ask that many questions. But when it's a female, we're like, oh, what's like the psychological explanation? What traumas did she go through to become like that? And we kind of wanted to challenge these limitations of like the female hero and what she could be like.
That was also Yang's kind of concept of a cowboy. He was very much challenging also our views on like a female character having a backstory and everything. And he was like, this is a cowboy just entering the scene, arriving at a new town and doing his thing. And that was super cool to explore with her.
Miu is sort of, she's just a very physical person. It's very much a state to be in. And you have to stay in that state. It's almost like you're sleeping, and it's like she doesn't speak so much. She stands, she observes a lot, and then she moves. And so it fits a lot to be in sort of that between state. I'm very there, but I'm also in another place.
Angela Bundelovich, Miu. She stares at a lit match. Miu throws the match.
Well, I'm a very superstitious person, and I have contacts with extraterrestrials through my work that I regularly speak with. So it was very natural for me to bring that into the process. I always knew that the Miu character and her so-called sister, Raquel, would essentially come from another dimension. I just had to figure out how I interpreted it into the story.
A character strikes with a blade. A woman clutches her breasts. A man bows his head. Blood drips from a knife into Miu's mouth. A woman in robes lies on a table. Angela.
I really like and I really respect Yang's choice to do a lot of, what would you call it, maybe like street casting, or just to take people in who are pure and natural in some sense, because they're just who they are, they're not actors.
The way I would cast it was one of the few elements that I took from my Pusher trilogy, where I would cast, you know, reality or seek outwards to find more what I found interesting. Most of the time, they were untouched, they were pure, they were original.
People who are really from the different environments, you know, you're standing actually in front of the real deal.
You have the real, like the people who know the real environments, but it's also a fairy tale where they're a little bit twisted, and I think that makes it even more interesting than if it had just been one-to-one.
William Yang directs. Then comes the first one, and it is this one that comes first. He clutches his cheek. And then it goes again without you knowing. But then you have received it so many times that it doesn't do much. He demonstrates the reaction to the blows. Are you ready? Yes, that's good.
I was street casted for Pusher 3. And then I begin to act, and there was more of it, and I feel like, you know, I found something that I love to do. The way that he made it, that he made he streetcars the people, made that he got something original. If you play a role that is near the personality that you have, then it's, of course, it's easier for you to play it. But he was very good at when we started. He was, you know, like, hey, Dan, you don't have to show me all these TV things you have learned, you know. I want you to be yourself, cool and relaxed. And then after that, I was, yeah, you know, I feel good, and I liked, I found my character. And he told me that, he said, hey, Dan, you are good at this shit. I think Yang, he was like opening up my eyes, and I was like, hey man, maybe I am, maybe he's right, maybe I'm good at this. So he was like changing my life, yeah.
Ramadan Husseini, Andre.
Since I was a child, I was like fighting for my life, you know, by myself. every day I came from school, I would have a lot of bruises in my face. My pants was destroyed. But I didn't want to tell my mom, so she was that thought like I was maybe too wild, you know. When I'm 14 years, I was living on the street in the school break. I didn't want to go out because I knew outside there was standing like a queue of people like want to fight me.
Jason Hendel Forsell, Chiang. He practices fighting.
I saw a Bruce Lee movie. And from that day, I knew what I'm going to do. I do all this kicking because I saw this on the movie. I exercise every day. You know? I never think I'm going to be a big movie star. It's like, it was a dream, you know? It feels good. Now I can be my own Bruce Lee.
Chiang in a white suit fights Mew. He's shown on a monitor in flickering lights.
When I met Jason, the only thing I thought, my God, he was built for cinema with that face. He was like a beautiful version of Quasimodo. And he had these techniques of fighting and brutality like a panther. And yet he was gentle and kind like a butterfly. And that combination already kind of, you can say, he created the character of Mr. Chiang right in front of me. And I just followed along the way.
I just look back and then play myself when I was young.
A pouting blue-white character with slick back hair, Andreas Nico Jorgensen, Niklas.
I've always had an open mindset on putting all my chips on something new. So, yeah, it's not the first time that I just went out and did something mad that I didn't know anything about, but I just wanted to go 100% on it.
Niklas' body is badly cut up.
I got the opportunity to try out playing as an actor with my role Niklas, and at that time I really did not enjoy where I was, so I decided to say fuck it and just go. Within 2 weeks or something like that, I've gotten the job and started filming. So it was it was a quick decision of just saying yes and just trying it out.
Andreas, casting video. All the girls, all the sweet girls sitting in the bar want you. They want to chewed, eaten. They want to be chewed, eaten by fucking Niklas.
He had that incredible face, so it was automatically him. There was an enormous amount of locked up emotions that I think could be channeled in a very effective and inspiring way through creativity, which is certainly what acting is. It's a creative process.
It's been absolutely incredible. It's been a very fun experience, so it's been giving me a lot of good times that I will remember for the rest of my life.
Yang directs, and then you will cut to this, where she then kicks him there, and then comes in and kicks him over. A clip of Mew and Niklas fighting. Mew shoves Niklas into a pig stall. Thanks for this experience, everybody. It has been a huge pleasure to work with all of you.
We did have some meetings in the writer's room with some of these actors who had the real life experiences, who could also correct certain scenes or dialogues where they would use different words.
Bang, bang.
Yang directs.
Bang.
And then you turn around. But when you stand here...
I have no acting experience whatsoever. It was the second casting, and she was like, yeah, don't hold back. And I was like, are you sure? And she was like, yeah, just give me all you got. And I was like, all right. And then she asked me something, and I was like, yeah, bah, 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 bah. And I was really like shouting my lungs out. And after I looked at her, and she was so calm, she was like, you did good, you did good.
Ebriama Jaite, Danny. Danny, wounded, fires under floodlights.
When I read the manuals, I think, I am Hulda. I just got that feeling. I have to practice when I was not educated like an actor. I don't have the education in this branch. I am also a single mom to a son, So I got that feeling if, okay, my son Blue took away and how do I feel? So I can, you know, the tears can just came out. So I got the feeling that I can play her. I think I understand her.
Lily is emotional as Mother Hulda. Zlatko Buric, Miroslav.
I met Nicholas first time in summer 95. It was casting for Pusher. We start to talk very open. Stuff like street life, dope experience, and immigrants' milieu. And so this moment when I met Nicholas, it was important for me in my life.
Zlatko knows. He has experienced a little of everything.
We have a past.
As Miroslav to Mew, but you are a lucky coin. Mew stares back.
I don't thrive on taking a chance on people, but I know that if you can come in a situation where performers that have not a lot of experience with them to let their guards down and be 100% themselves, you mostly touch magic.
In Woods, Cenk is his Mew's hand. Lola, then Liv Corfixen, executive producer.
My dad is a weird dude. He thinks in film.
He has his work and he has his family. We're a team in a way. He was very much dependent on me because otherwise he couldn't go away and work for 10 months and do drive or... So it's been like collaboration in a way, like how do we do this? Like for instance, with Only God Forgives, we moved to Bangkok for 6 months and Lola went to school there and like...
He's very a family-oriented guy, but you know, Liv has just been reading the scripts and me and my sister have been kind of not really involved with what his work has been up to. So I think he's always used to looking outwards and finding people outside of his family compared to this time where he kind of looked inward and saw what the family could do. You know, even my sister is participating in the show, so I think that's also kind of fun, a little family trip.
I just feel like I'm always a part of his work in a way, even though I'm not always on the set every day. Then the whole developing of the scripts, he talked to me about like maybe a character or I read the script.
I mean, it's always nice to film with someone that you're close to and kind of have a good relationship with, but sometimes I'm like, I got this, I can do this on my own, you know? You don't need to be screaming in my ear. But you know, it helps with her anger coming out, so I guess it works both ways.
On set as Raquel, more, more. Yang physically mimes cranking the tension as Raquel stares ahead. And he raises a hand. Scream! Raquel screams silently. That was really good, honey. That was good. We'll take it one more time. Angry again.
I never thought it was going to be her. It wasn't so much on my radar. But as I had the idea for the character very late in the process, we were almost near the end of shooting. And we had, there'd been a coffin on set in Nicholas's estate that I thought was a really cool prop, but I kept on bringing it back every time we were shooting there till one day I was like, maybe we should put somebody in the coffin. What if he has a sister? No, it should be a stepsister, because then we can have more interpretation because she's actually part of the Mew world. And that got the ball rolling. And so we were casting and I wasn't necessarily getting what I was looking for outwards until I think Liv said, well, maybe it's because it's right in front of you if you really think about it. And obviously casting your family members is an intimate process. What if it doesn't work? So I tricked her by casting her without her knowing it while she was doing homework because she was in her finals in high school.
And he came in one day, and since my mom had been helping on the show, I just thought he wanted my help to see an outside view of someone who does have no idea what's going on.
I went out to the kitchen. I said, can you please say these lines? And she's like, why? I said, can you say the goddamn lines? She's like, why? I said, just say the lines. She's like, fine, I'll say the lines.
And I acted out a couple of lines, which was Raquel's lines. And he was like, oh, great, thanks. And I was like, you're welcome.
And she said it was such conviction and clarity and natural that I was like, maybe in a way I had already created Raquel as a kind of rebellious version of what I had at home, which was a 19-year-old daughter.
And the next day he was like, well, you know, I really liked you for the part. Would you want to play her? And I was like, sure, why not? See what happens.
Beams of light shoot from the eyes of a figure in silhouette. Blue light flickers.
I'm a fetish personality. I like fetish. I like detail. I like attention to detail. And fashion is part of that. Fashion is also, you know, revolutionary. Fashion is an extension. Fashion is a mirror into who you are.
Yeah, Miu is very much wearing a sort of a suit, sort of an armor for her.
Nicholas was very clear from the beginning that he wanted a tracksuit. It's something everyone is familiar with. It's armor in a way. It's a piece of utility clothing. It's built to last, built to be durable, built to withstand the elements. But mainly the protective aspect of it, I thought was very interesting. I think I took a few more risks, or a lot more risks this time, because it's very diverse. Generally, just researching women throughout history who have, in some ways, been fighting on the path of right, if you like, almost like it's a kind of quest. So I found looking at Joan of Arc quite helpful. And how she looked with the short hair and the armor that she wore, and tried to adapt that into sportswear or something that could also be perceived in a contemporary situation, like a coat or a puffer vest or a tracksuit.
Jane Marshall Whittaker, costume designer. Mew stands on a grand staircase. Lily is in makeup. She makes a face, crossing her eyes as lipstick is applied. Angela smiles in the makeup chair. Slatko chats happily. A performer has jewels stuck around her eyes. Louise Brune, hair and makeup designer.
Normally we didn't plan very much. It was very much working as a process, developing as the script would develop and change. We would adjust. We ended up doing a big flower makeup for a dream sequence that Miu had. We'd been shooting in this mansion house, and there was all these beautiful flowers that we used on set. And the set designer was taking them away, and they were standing outside. And I just thought, do you mind if I kind of grab some of these flowers? I like to, I don't know what I'm going to use them for, but I'm just going to put them in my William Blake book. Then one day, Nicholas asked me, can you make Miu into some sort of demon? She's having this dream sequence, and she's standing up against this wallpaper with flowers. Maybe you can be inspired by that.
Miu in the floral makeup with gold eyeshadow in front of the floral wallpaper. She opens her eyes expressionlessly. Miu reaches out, her hands claw-like, then fades away, just leaving the wallpaper.
Everyone knows he's obsessed with movies. I don't think that's a secret, and his brain just never stops. So when we're in the car, and even on set, he plays music, and he plays different music to get different feelings out of the different characters. And I think music is a big part of him relaxing and being able to think.
The music is, you know, heals and it inspires. By choosing a piece of music for a specific day or a scene, not just helps the actors, but it helps the crew. It helps the cameraman, it helps the designers, it helps the makeup, it helps everyone.
I could also sense that sometimes if I would lose it, then Yang would just know that he has to play a song to remind those senses.
He quickly found out that I'm very fond of classical music, so we've been listening to quite a lot of classical music to set me in a mood. I react quite a lot to music, so that's been very helpful to, like, set me in a very grim mood.
Since it's my first acting job, it was fairly new to me, but I actually really like it. Now I don't think I can do without it, because it kind of, I mean, it depends what you play, but it, you know, kind of gets different feelings out in you. So we would play a lot of music, and it would either be kind of a horror themed music, or if it was like a sad scene or something else to kind of easier to get in the mood to like make your feelings move a little bit.
Lola as Raquel, you have been a naughty boy. Niklas is heavily blindfolded. Peter, composer.
Niklas is good at painting you a picture before you start the music. And sometimes you'll have two things that are at odds with each other, and that's exciting because something happens there. He can mention a group and then a movie, and these two things have nothing to do with each other. You get something that's never heard before. We don't score characters. We do it by shapes and colors. You score the darkness and you score the light. And sometimes you score a little light in the darkness.
A split screen of two sets in dim but vivid colors.
Whenever I'm done with something, I exercise it from my existence. And it kind of no longer really exists anymore. It's now in the hands of billions of people on the internet to react to.
William sits in a chair in front of lights and the interview camera. The title in pink cursive, Copenhagen Cowboy, produced and directed by Nicholas Koltnagel. There are photos of the cast. Interviews: Nicholas Winding Refn, Lola Corfixen, Angela Bundanovich, Lily Zhang, Magnus Nordenhoff-Jönch, Liv Corfixen, Slatko Buric, Andreas Licker Jürgensen, Jane Marshall Whittaker, Louise Brun, Peter, Jason Hendel Forser, Ramadan Hosseini, Ebriama Yaite, Johanna Olgren. Sara Isabella Jönsson, edited by Simon Bank-Kjellgaard and Nicholas Koltnagel. Further credits appear.
A red letter N unfolds into a spectrum of colors.